Hello, and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined, as always, by my standing desk brethren.
What is happening? Hi.
Welcome to the standing desk family.
Thank you so much. It has been so chaotic because I have so much to put together. I'm supposed to also see Foolish Baseball tomorrow. Bailey Freeman. Can't wait for that. And I'm so embarrassed because my room is absolute mess. And you can't see the PitcherList office like this. So
You'll get it together. I trust you.
I don't know. We'll see. Depends on how quick this podcast goes. But wait, you said brethren though. Do you have a standing desk as well?
I do. I am currently standing at my standing desk.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh man. Well then hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Raise that sucker up.
Raise it. I hope you guys can hear it.
No, it's so high. It's just so high quality. It's just so high quality that it's
all right. You know what? Now I'm standing as I do this podcast and you can't see me. I'm out of the picture. But anyway, right, guys, you can't see any of this. Hi, we're going to talk about the top 100. It's going to be great.
Now we got to fix the microphone. Yeah, I think that standing, for old people with back issues and also just tall people, standing desks, really, really useful. So as Nick is adjusting his microphone, I will just let you know that, first of all, if you could please rate and review the show, super helpful, helps to get it out there wherever you get your podcasts. As always, we're going to be going over the top 100 today, which Nick updated. And again, as a reminder, if you haven't yet actually sat through when Nick makes the rankings, you are able to do that live as he does that. So that's something definitely to check out on Mondays. Nick, where is that taking place again?
I mean, it's playback.tv/pitchers. If you don't know yet, I mean, what are you doing?
You do. Well, there was the Twitch in years past, so it's still in the back of my head sometimes. Yeah, yes, sure. Playback.tv. Yeah. So over the weekend, I was celebrating my best friend's 40th birthday. We found out that one of the guys who was with us commutes every day on the Metro North into Manhattan, and he chooses voluntarily to stand the whole way. Claims it's good for his back. I think that's a little bit of psychopathic train behavior.
Sure, yeah.
But that's going to be our theme for today is what? Train behavior.
Train behavior. Well, I mean, yes. Here we are getting standing desks and choosing to stand as we do a podcast, Eric. Yes,
but I'm not in public when there's a seat, you know, when there's also we're talking about a very long commute in.
This is an hour and change, Eric.
That's true. Whatever. Whatever.
It's great for our posture.
Knee hurts. It's good for my posture.
We're
doing train behavior. Obviously, there is good train behavior. Subway. We can talk about like subway behavior. There are things you do that are appreciated by others and are, you know, kind of like the epitome of how you should behave. Mm-hmm. There are some major train red flags.
Yeah.
There are some things that you think would be good to do on a train, but maybe are not welcome. Yeah. So you can go through it all.
Cool.
And then, yeah. Are we ready to jump in?
Today's list is brought to you by Shota Imanaga, who is I'm an ADGA, and it's pretty amazing how prophetic his name is, honestly.
Because I remember last year,
when we first heard about him, I jokingly said, oh yeah, of course he's going to be great. I'm an ADGA. And he literally has done nothing but been an ace this year. So, of course, it became the featured image today. And what is the name of this list, Eric?
Can I tell you, I came up with the name before I saw the image because I didn't want to keep force feeding the name to the image.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this list is called We're Having a Fire Sale.
Right. Of course, because Sale has been so good. You're actually telling me about your league mate who so badly wants to get Sale, but then we went further into it. It's like, no, he wants to fleece you and leave with Sale.
he wants Sale. I'm sure he doesn't just want to fleece me, but he wants Sale and he wants pitching depth. So he doesn't want
to give you some of those great pitchers back. Sale. It's like, that's not
well,
how
yes, but also with a bat as well. But the problem is I lost Casas. I need a better bat. But you know what? This isn't a hitting podcast. We don't need to talk about hitters.
It is not. And it is about Eric Smolski being correct about Chris Sale in the preseason. You guys can go back and listen to those. And he was just so adamant about Chris Sale. And it's pretty amazing. He got his aces against ace tag, of course. And he's just been phenomenal. I think I moved him up pretty high.
You did.
Today to about 11 or 12. We'll get to that.
It will not be a long time before we get to him.
And I'm going to give you guys a little tidbit, by the way. The Pitchless community asked, now that Pablo Lopez has pitched since I published this list, is Pablo Lopez going to be above or below Chris Sale? And we'll get to that when we do.
Yeah, we got to get to that almost right now because we're going to start with your number one, who starts with number one, Tyler Glass now. Number two, Zach Wheeler. Number three, Corbin Burns. Number four, Tarek Skubal. Number five, Luis Castillo. Number six, Pablo Lopez. Number seven, Cole Reagans. Number eight, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Number nine, Shota Imanaga. Number 10, Jared Jones. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
Look, let's be honest. It's that move you make when you're sitting down and it's a pretty full car and you see somebody that probably wants the seat, probably needs the seat. And you do that little head nod and the motion with your hand. He says, you want a seat? Yeah. I can get up again. You want a seat? That's tier number one. That never needs to die. That should always be there. It's common courtesy. And it's just so, so important that everyone understands that. And also, it's common courtesy to be aware when you are sitting and it is a packed car in the first place to then be looking to see if there is someone that you can offer. It's not just offering it when you notice it. It's actually actively looking to give it away.
Eye contact, man. It's not a bad thing. You know, look up, see who needs it. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe an old person, maybe somebody with an injury. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe it's Eric Smolski taking the advice of his friend and realizing, oh no, I can't do this anymore.
Yes, maybe it's, listen, there have been times where like I have been on a totally inflamed ankle, like from a basketball injury or something.
Oh yeah.
All I want to do is sit down, but nothing about me looks injured.
Right. Nobody's
giving me the seat. But I just
100%. I've been like faint or something after like giving blood or something along those lines. And on the train, I'm like, I need to sit down. And I would just feel so internally guilty being there. But in this tier, I will say a lot of people in the chat wanted me to put anyone else, but Tyler Glasnow is number one. I understand like Tarek Skubal has a pretty good case at this point as well. And I elected just to kind of be like, I'm just going to leave things right now. I was tempted to move down Pablo Lopez. I was tempted to move down Cole Reagans. But then Cole Reagans, seven innings, four base runners against the Athletics. Looks all right. I am still a little bit worried about the four-seamer and cutter being a little more hittable this year. Same with the slider actually not being that put-away pitch. But then again, he did really well in that last one. And, it's only been about 6 weeks, something like that, 7 weeks. So, we've got a lot of season left, but we've got some newcomers. Yamamoto, Imanaga are here. Jones in this top tier, because I just kind of figured, these guys are de facto, like, you start them and you don't really think anything about them.
It is crazy that Jones, I'm curious about. Imanaga, I get based on the results as well. And we know Jones has been really good. Obviously, the innings within a particular start remain a little bit of a concern. Though I guess that's not true. The last three starts, he's gone 7, 6, and 6.
Yep.
But you're looking at six runs, three innings, or six innings, three runs, six innings, three runs, two earned, a good start, five innings, three runs. So it hasn't quite been, it's been great. Don't get me wrong. I guess my question is, it hasn't quite been the dominance of these top tier guys for it to be a dead set, like have to move Jones into one. So you just felt better about him fitting with that tier of pitchers?
There's a misconception, I think, at times when I move guys on the list, it's only when they perform the results are necessarily absurdly good. It's more about, are there skills that we saw before still present? And so you can actually move up guys even though they allow like 400 runs or something because the changeup is around or whatever it is, right? And at the moment, Jared Jones, first in swing strike rate in the majors.
Yes.
10th in walk rate, 15th in strikeout rate, 15th in whip. It's a 0.91 whip and a 31% K rate and a 3% and change walk rate. His striker, new stat this year, which is essentially saying how many strikes you throw and how much ICR do you allow, which is pretty much the best thing you can do. You can throw strikes without allowing contact that harms you. Yeah, it's fourth best in the majors. I mean, he's absurd.
Yeah.
He is what he is at this point. It's like, I didn't want to push him up too high initially. Because it's like, well, how long is he going to hold on to this? I'm like, this is who he is. So he's here. And then you could say, okay, the innings, everything like that. Well, he's at 10th. He's not at first.
Yeah.
You know, if this is essentially the skill set of Strider, and we we would trust Strider more, obviously, because of win potential. But then again, he has three wins out of nine starts. So that's what, like a 10 to 12 win season or so?
Yeah.
Something like that. But I don't know. The guy is dope. Makes us feel dope. And like the guys in tier two all have their reasons for us to be like, yeah, but Jared Jones, you're starting him every single time and you're so excited to watch it.
Sure. I get that. I guess and again, we're picking nits here because I'm talking about like moving him with the next tier of guys, not like moving him way down. The thought was like, hey, you know, 38% ICR, the home run to fly ball rate has been a little bit of an issue, but that is, I think, just part of the way that he like attacks the zone. So these aren't things where like you're not upset about it, but it might fit with some of the guys in the next tier, like the Sales, Kirby, Gallon, Freed.
Do you want to know something wild though? Traditionally with this skill set, for example, 40% ICR for Strider this year, last year was actually 41%.
Yeah.
With this skill set where you don't have as many balls in play.
Yeah.
Then you're okay having it being a little bit higher than usual. The fact that it's still under 40% overall, which is always a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. And you also get those whiffs and it's just a 7 hit per 9. Right. Jared Jones is dope. It makes us feel dope.
That's true. Happy to see him this high. The tier that I thought he may be joining was tier number two. Starts with Chris Sale at number 11.
It does.
Number 12, George Kirby. Number 13, Zach Gallen. Number 14, Max Fried. Number 15, Aaron Nola. Number 16, Joe Ryan. Number 17, Kevin Gausman. Number 18, Logan Gilbert. Number 19, Freddie Peralta. Number 20, Logan Webb. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
This one is essentially holding the door for somebody. It's like they're coming in. I know they say don't hold the doors, whatever. No. Sometimes you're just like, it's really nice. That's always just like that's a stud move. Someone's rushing in and you see them and you catch it. That's pretty cool, I gotta say. That's a good thing to do.
Proper behavior. These are important lessons to learn.
Exactly.
We alluded to Sale a little bit at the top, but I guess let's get to the listener question. or the Discord question.
I do want to say there is an argument that Sale should be in the top tier too. Mm-hmm. And kind of almost in retrospect, looking at this now, I feel like Sale belongs closer to Jones than he does to George Kirby. Then again, I didn't have tonight's performance, but he's second in striker, third in striker in the majors. And he's killing it, man. I'm just really happy for you.
Great.
6-1 record too. He's pitching for that winning team, of course. The changeup hasn't been as much of a deal as I thought it would be. 12% usage. I mean, it's been great. 26% ICR, 75% strike rate. There's your reason why striker is amazing for him. But still just 12% usage is a little surprising to me for Chris Sale's changeup. But yeah, I mean, Chris Sale's dope. I would have him above Pablo Lopez after tonight. And the thing really with Pablo Lopez, if you're wondering what's going on, it's his changeup. That is the pitch that he said in the offseason. The changeup is always there. It's not right now. It's a 66% strike rate. Last year, 58%. All of a sudden this year, and that's really strange. He's just not throwing it as much in the zone. I mean, he's missing it a ton more. And it's hurting him right now. It's that simple. 58% strike rate on the sweeper as well. 53% of the curveball. It's making him do more. Forced to do more with the fastball, which has been good, but also not quite as commanded as well. And so far, he'd already allowed 10 fewer hits than he should have on that four-seamer this year. So Pablo Lopez, with a 159 BABIP, had been getting fortunate with that pitch. And yeah, I think if you're going to bet on one thing for Pablo Lopez, is that the changeup would be good. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it's not is kind of an inclination to me being like, well, no, that's going to correct itself.
I feel like we've seen it with him in the past, and I could be wrong, but I feel like I am remembering times with him, even back when he was at the Marlins, mm-hmm. where you were like, this is his pitch. Where did it go?
Right.
And so again, there is some comfort in thinking like if this is the pitch that he says is always there,
right?
He's more likely to correct that than a newer pitch,
right?
But also, yeah, if this is the pitch that he says is always there and it's not, so like what's going on?
Right. I mean, the last time it wasn't there really was 2022. You could say at the mm-hmm. same time he still got more O swing on that and a higher strike rate. I just can't really buy the fact that it's just a 23% CSW pitch now. I just know this is going to be back. Don't worry about it. Should he be underneath Sale though? Yeah, probably. Sale's just been so good, and Pablo isn't as consistent as we want him to be at the moment.
Yeah. Sale, you know, we talked about at the beginning of the year, like everybody was talking about velocity and all that coming back, and it was like that slider command last year was not particularly great. It seemed like the slider was a little bit all over the place and he would lose it at times. He's pounding the zone with that pitch this year. The swinging strike rates are up, called strike rates are up, strike rates overall are up. It is kind of leading what he's doing in a way that's providing him the floor to withstand the, you know, the fact that the changeup hasn't really been as big of a
thing. As present as we necessarily would want. Yeah.
Max Fried was a dropper here, six spots in the rankings, obviously coming off a poor start against the Padres. It was his first like real stinker in a while. I know his start against the Dodgers a few weeks ago wasn't great, but it was a pretty solid start given the opponent. It felt like the command was a little wonky here from Fried. Did you see anything that made you think more than just like a this was just not a good start?
Well, it's just, yeah. I mean, overall, we haven't really seen the Max Fried that we want to see. We did have, I mean, obviously we had that complete game shutout, but it was against the Marlins. He had a good start against the Mariners. And it feels like he's just taking advantage of the bad teams as opposed to actually just going out there and demanding success as he has for so many years before, right? This is someone who's supposed to have a massive suppression of walks him, and seeing 10% at the moment, it's just like, what? Mm-hmm. What's going on? You're supposed to be like a 5-6% walk guy with a good hip or nine, and then also, hey, 26% K rate. And the changeup has eluded him a bit. It's about a 58% strike rate right now, but really last year was a 19-20% swing strike rate. Now it's like a 12. It just hasn't been that reliable offering. Same thing there. O swing has dropped 10 points on it. So I do wonder, you know, what is kind of going on with that? He just hasn't found the feel for it quite yet. That was a huge, huge shift for him in the future. So hopefully Max Fried gets back to that. And it's really, this isn't saying like, oh no, I don't believe that he will, but this tier two is kind of about, hey, this is the gateway to tier one and you're just not really executing that and you're going to take a hit because of it.
Yeah, I get that. Any additional concern you want to mention on Peralta and Logan Webb since they both dropped six, or is this just...
Peralta's Professor Chaos. He's just kind of losing the control of everything, but we see kind of go back and forth in ton, and we know obviously the ceiling of it. While Logan Webb had the weirdest start ever. Did you follow this one against the Dodgers?
I didn't, actually.
Oh, man. So we talked last week about Logan Webb, right? What was the problem? It was a changeup, right? The changeup. Oh my gosh, you're not.
We're saying that a lot so far on this.
I know, changeups. What's going on, huh? Oh man. So who has actually had like an amazing changeup? Okay, Ranger Suarez, fine. And Tarek Skubal and Cole Ricketts. Okay, I'm done with that. Logan Webb decided it's the Dodgers, and you know what? I'm gonna throw my changeup fourth most among everything.
Mm-hmm.
Four seamers, sinkers, and sweepers more than changeups, which is what? That is bonkers. This is a guy who threw like 50 or even 60, not percent, total in starts, individual starts last year. That's his pitch. That's the thing. And he decided to just kind of pull the rug out from underneath the Dodgers. And I feel like it was like a trick shot almost.
That's what I was going to say. It's right? Like when you're in division and you're facing a team you see often enough, you might just say, like, I'm going to throw you totally off what you're expecting.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what to make of it because it's like, all right, that's like an audible, you know, it's the Mulligan play. Like this is the, I'm not even going to quote it cause that's football. I don't care about it. But it's just one of those things that you can do once and that's great. But who are you now? You still got that changeup. That's weird. So I lowered him more so, I think, because Joe Ryan's looking great. Aaron Nola's looking great. Zach Gallen did the Blakestown blueprint and it kind of worked. Mm-hmm. Chris Hale's looking great. Like, and I just keep seeing Logan Webb. I'm like, well, I still am not getting any sort of validation here. So You get down to 20. You got one more start until you lose the aces and ace tag, buddy. Keep it together.
Oof. That is the stakes have been set.
They have.
You know what I mean? They have.
They have.
We're going to see who's answered the call in tier three, but we're going to do that after this break. Tier three starts with a pair of teammates. Number 21, Kyle Bradish. Number 22, Grayson Rodriguez. Back on the list. Number 23, Bailey Ober. Number 24, Framber Valdez. Number 25, Paul Skeens. Number 26, Yusei Kikuchi. Number 27, Sonny Gray. Number 28, Dylan Cease. Number 29, Yu Darvish. Number 30, Walker Buehler. Number 31, Justin Steele. And number 32, Jesus Luzardo. What's this tier called? Why is it called?
This is moving into the car. Properly, because so many times I see this and it's a busy rush hour, whatever, and everybody stays right where the doors are,
right by the door.
Get in there, okay? It can be tough to get in and out. It can be feeling like sardines, but if you just go a little further, there's like all this room, you know, where the people are sitting. Okay, you gotta spread it out.
Can I tell you, I am a little guilty of this now when I travel with my son with the stroller, because it's easier to be right in the door. You're out of the way of some people, and I just get, you know, on and off the train quicker. But it is
problem, Eric.
I feel in my bones that I'm an issue. I understand that.
Eric, get it together. We need you.
No. I kind of want to talk about, even though he didn't move at all, I want to talk about Yu Darvish.
Yeah,
because I think
runs. Amazing.
I think people, you know, before his injury, there was a lot of like, Is it over for Yu Darvish? Are we seeing the decline? You know, is he like a top 40 starting pitcher as opposed to, you know, the guy that we had seen before? Are you seeing anything that backs up, anything different that backs up the results since coming off the IL?
Well, I mean, really for me, it's Darvish leaning into his slider as his main foundation, right? I've really expressed that is his best pitch over the years. It's the most consistent one. And to see him, instead of just being sinker slider, actually being slider and everything else, is working super well for him at the moment. I'm seeing slider usage right now 29%, 24%, 35%, and 43% in the last four games. And then before that, it was around 20% or under for the other outings. So seeing him lean back into that slider, which is phenomenal. It's a 20% ICR this year with a 75% strike rate for a near 70% striker. And normally when I see like high 50s, I'm like, oh yeah. Near 70% is 96th percentile of all sliders. And yeah, this is actually pretty interesting. We're talking about all of the elite striker guys. Darvish is seventh among all starting pitchers. So I love to see that. The only question with Darvish is just, this is a four game run. And is it going to be different tomorrow? We see this constantly. We try and say like, oh, cool, he's this guy now, and then he's not. So I'm not quite ready to just say that this is it, but it's certainly a good step in the right direction. And I think if he does it for another start or two, then I'm like, okay, this is more like.
And I think where you have him ranked suggests a certain level of confidence. And like we've always talked about him being a relatively high floor pitcher because of his deep arsenal and that he can attack hitters in different ways. And so it's nice to see right now him bounce back in a way. It's like, this is nice to see him when he's pitching well too. He's just got such a unique set of pitches that he can attack hitters with that it's fun to watch Darvish when he's good, because you just don't really know what his attack plan is going to be in a given game, and it's fun to kind of see how it shakes out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's like painting a canvas almost at times.
Yeah.
It's like, let's just see what we got. Okay. Let's make a little happy accident. That's okay. Let's
move on. It was not fun to watch Framber Valdez's fifth inning against the Angels today, but I guess we'll get to that later. Framber Valdez given up an eight spot to the Los Angeles Angels today.
Get out of here.
Seven runs on three homers in the fifth inning.
Oh my god!
A total disaster of an inning, but obviously this is happening as we're recording, so we'll have to get to that later, and you'll read Nick's thoughts all about that on the roundup tomorrow morning. So please make sure you check out that article. Last in this tier, well, you could talk to me about either of these two guys. We mentioned that the first start for Paul Skeens was solid but not electric. Like the command was a little bit off, but he looked really good. The second start was very, very good. We also saw a similar bump from Walker Buehler in terms of his ranking jumping up six spots. Are these two guys in their second starts that you felt started to show signs of a little more comfort and a little more of a skill set that you could get behind?
I mean, you watched that skiing start.
Yes, it was so good.
Do I need to say anything? If you didn't watch that skiing start, then like, what do you want? Go watch it. You don't need me at all. That was absurd. And that wasn't even like a weak Cubs team. That's a good Cubs team.
Right.
So, you know, I debated with this one a lot of like, people were saying, don't you want Kikuchi though? He's almost getting an ace and stuff. I'm like, yeah, but that was just like demonstrably absurd. And it's like, you have to be aggressive with that, you know? So yeah, Paul Skeens, he's dope. He's like two starts away. If he does that for like two more games, I'm like, you're an ace now. Who cares? You're pretty much treating him like one now if you have him on your team, right?
It's fun for Pirates fans, man. Just hold on to those two guys a little bit. Bueller, I know the Reds are scuffling a little bit right now, but six shutout, seven Ks. The command looked a lot better in this start than we had seen earlier on. We knew, you know, the velocity was fine. I know it was down a little bit, but he's throwing 95. Like that was mm-hmm. fine in the early starts. Now we're getting the command back with it. This felt like a little bit more of like a good Walker Buehler start.
Yeah, Walker Buehler was more in command of just what he was doing. The second start was everything just like down the middle. It's like no. I feel as if Walker Buehler is figuring this out a bit more. I still very much want him to go high heater. And Lance Brzozowski has a whole video about the Dodgers being sick to high heaters. And I was like, oh man, yeah, this is, if you want more on that, like listen to The Craft a couple weeks ago, you know, and I talked a lot about why the Dodgers might not want to. There was Grant Washburn making a really interesting point about, I think it was one extra homer per 100, for high fastballs in Dodger Stadium and Yankee Stadium. But to me, that's like 1%. And I'm like, that doesn't matter, does it? Like, is that really like enough? Are you saving so much by like the outs you would have gotten versus like one home run? I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know if we're going to see Walker Buehler go upstairs until he's a free agent, which is next year, maybe. Right. So I'm excited for that. I just like that he's throwing good cutters and sliders and fastballs now. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, this is probably going to be solid Walker Buehler. Is he going to be in tier one? Maybe not, because I think he's going to actually settle like a 25% K rate guy, not like a 30% plus or so. But that's cool to me.
Yeah, I love that you're already planning for his free agency, but I understand it.
Well, it's like, he's not going to do it there. You know, right. I wish Mackenzie Gore was going to be a free agent at the end of this year, you know?
Yeah. Wild. Just there's a lot of guys we can wish cast on. Tier number four starts with number 33, Nick Pivetta. Number 34, Jack Flaherty. Number 35, Ranger Suarez. Number 36, Cutter Crawford. Number 37, Ronel Blanco. And number 38, Carlos Rodon. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Okay, so this is you like knowing where the exit is for the train. So this isn't necessarily etiquette, but this is just kind of like, hey, cool. Those that are pros and solid, it's like, look, I know where to get on this train so that when I get out of it, there are the stairs.
Oh, yeah. Right? You mean like where the exit to the station is? Like this door opens right to, it's crucial.
Yeah, that is always solid. It's there for you. It's productive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not necessarily one of those like electric moments on the train that you know exactly what to do in the moment, but this is like a rock solid thing that's always there.
But it saves you at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Like it saves you.
I know people that don't think about this stuff, and I'm just like, how can you live? You're just wasting time.
You're just wasting so much time.
Wasting so much time.
Speaking of saving you, Carlos Rodon is on, seems like he might be on his way back. Might be not, you know, saving the Yankees rotation, saving fantasy rotations. I mean, the slider is looking much better of late. And I will admit freely to early on being very hesitant because the slider seemed inconsistent to me. And I know the command of it wasn't as good against the White Sox, but it was the White Sox, so he got away with it. But it seems like it's a step toward not getting back to like San Francisco Giants Carlos Rodon, but getting to a version of him where he is like a consistently solid fantasy starter.
Well, I mean, he wasn't throwing the slider as much before the April 27th start. And yes, he has a six earned run clunker against the Orioles, who, by the way, destroy left-handed batters. But he's thrown the slider a lot more since then. It's helped out a ton. I think it's helped his fastball as well in the same time. And he's also throwing like 96 now. He threw 97 in his final pitch on Sunday. I was there. It was awesome. And he's looking more and more like his former self. Now, he's not going to be the 33% strikeout guy. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be a Holly. That's like a 25% strikeout rate if you're lucky, with a fair number of wins, a solid ERA and WHIP. Like, this is good. And I'm a fan of this. This is a good version. He's going to have some low-ups. Of course he is, but this is that kind of tier where everyone's going to a bit. And I felt that he deserved to be in this one as opposed to, say, like tier 6, tier 5, because it's like, no, this makes sense. It's a good slider now, good fastball. We've seen this before. Like, it's going to be solid, consistent. You're not going to drop him. You're not really going to think too much about it.
Agreed. Do you want to talk about either Pivetta or Flaherty? They're big risers for you. I think it's more just Pivetta getting back off the IL and Flaherty continuing to do what he's been.
Yeah, doing. You know it. You got it. You know, Pivetta had a bad start and still a little against Atlanta. Then it's two starts now looking like the Pivetta before injury. And Flaherty, the question was always, is his fastball going to be too detrimental? Because the slider, every single start has been so good down. Mm-hmm. Down and in town. That's what I like to say now.
Is that what you say now?
That is what I say now.
Okay.
And really, is the fastball going to be too punishable that he has those like 4-run games while still striking out some batters, right? But we've seen that fastball look better lately, so everything's cool, and he's done it more consistently, so he's going to keep going up as long as that keeps going up.
Yeah, I love it. Get on board. I was hesitant early on, and kudos. I'll just shout out to my buddy Sammy, who
Sammy from the podcast.
Yeah, after our home league draft, like before the season even started, he dropped DL Hall and he picked up Jack Flaherty. And I was like, I don't know, man. I think you might regret that. And he did. He certainly has not regretted that.
That's good.
That was a very clutch move by him. Tier number 5 starts with number 39, Garrett Crochet. Number 40, Mackenzie Gore. Number 41, Luis Gil. Number 42, Brian Wu. And number 43, Bryce Miller. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Ooh, okay. So this has the potential of being great, right? That's what this whole tier is about. It's mm-hmm. kind of young. It's everything. And I would say, okay, so for this one, it's getting up out of your seat before the train arrives. Okay? Like, this doesn't happen enough. I think especially when it's a busier one, making the move to go to the door before it's actually the station just helps everything, because people can shuffle into your seat and mm-hmm. make it nice and easier. Just get ready to go, and then you can get out faster than, like, you're not holding up the people who are waiting to come in. Mm-hmm. Just get up out of your seat before the station arrives. Okay.
I like that, but it's also risky because now you're up and the train is moving. And if you don't have that balance,
well, then how are you going to get it if you don't try?
That's true. But I like it because there's risk in these tiers. Like our boy Brian Wu, who is number 42, even though he left his first start with more discomfort in his forearm, and then they said it wasn't a big deal, and we weren't sure, and he wound up pitching and looked pretty solid against the Royals. But it's like I have to go back and look at it, but wasn't he like 90% some version of a fastball, like four seam and sinker? He was just like, I'm just going to throw fastballs, and it worked.
It worked. Yeah. That's fine. I mean,
who knows if that was compensating for something or if that was the plan. But
yeah, it's possible. The way I see it is that there was no reported forearm injury. So fine, you come up more, but it's still there. He still has a little red box of the injury risk. So hopefully he's okay.
I know that you don't like to prognosticate on this kind of stuff too much. However, as a pitching fanatic and also as a Yankee fan, I'm curious about your thoughts on the future of Luis Gil as Garrett Cole starts facing batters and goes toward a rehab assignment.
You are the fourth person today to ask me this.
Mm. Well, because first of all, I had to blurb it for work today. Blurb Garrett Cole facing live hitters for the first time.
Oh, did you hint at Luis Gil inside of it? Is it all your fault, Eric?
It might be. I did hint at Luis Gil.
Legitimately all your fault.
I'll take it.
Because here's the thing. Don't focus on it. Don't think about it. You think the Yankees, if Luis Gil is legitimately at 41 and that's how he's performing, right? If he's at that level and he's doing so well, you think the Yankees are going to say, nah, we're good.
Like, no, that was what I basically said. I don't think they're gonna do that.
I know, but you put it in their heads.
I know.
Well, listen, Eric, you have so much power.
These are the decisions we need to make.
You can affect so much.
Because some people may be like, Cole's coming back. I need to get out from under Luis Gil. And that might not be the way to approach it.
So here's the thing. Look, six-man rotations. I've said this before, guys. You know this. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm going to say? Six-man rotations are like the Fellowship of the Ring. Okay? It starts off with all these people with grand plans. And at the end of the day, it's just two guys struggling to survive. Okay? Right? And the Yankees would be really smart. Let's just say, when is this? When is Gerrit Cole going to return? Three weeks from now? Let's say a month. A month? But we're talking 4 weeks ahead? Oh, yeah. My gosh. You know what can happen in 4 weeks?
Everything.
So much.
Yeah. The Yankees could...
He could just be bad by then.
Could send down Jose Budo so they could put Adrian Hauser in the rotation. The Mets six-man rotation that doesn't even have one of their six best starters.
Right. But yes. Okay. So that's the Mets on the other side of town. And the Yankees have been so fortunate.
Yeah,
they literally have had no issues outside of Gerrit Cole. It's actually one of the rare rotations in the majors right now that has had a rotation from opening day and not changed it.
And they've all been very good.
Right? It's wild. So he's got a month left here, okay? And you think about it, let's say even he's okay. Let's say everything's fine. You got Gerrit Cole back. Well, let's think about the situation. You got Rodon, injury history. You got Cortez, injury history. You got Luis Gil, innings maybe too much. You have a guy coming back from injury. What do you think he should do? Maybe add an extra day of rest. Right? That actually is a good thing. So I'd be really shocked if they said, yeah, let's not do it. Let's just do a six man. But Nick, that means they get one less day of Gerrit Cole a week. They've been fine. They'll do it.
Agreed.
Okay? Don't think about it, guys.
Let me ask you another Luis Gil question. The last two starts, he's thrown two cutters in each start. I would normally not consider that anything to think about, except we know the Yankees love cutters. And so I don't think it's nothing that he's starting to slowly incorporate it. Do you think I'm reading too much into that? Or do you think that the Yankees are clearly trying to see if they can work a cutter into his repertoire a little bit?
So he threw two against the White Sox.
Yeah. And two the start before against the Rays as well.
And how many strikes did he throw? One out of four.
Oh, was it? Because it was one out of two the first start. So
and then it was 0 for 2 the second.
Yeah.
So the Yankees are known to throw cutters. You know me, guys. You're the cutter. Let's go. It's the most... everyone learned how to do a slider, but then the cutter is the middle ground of getting strikes, right? And the biggest problem for Luis Gil, what do you know? Throwing strikes.
Right.
So that's I can imagine that being a helpful addition. At the end of the day, I think mentality is really the biggest thing with Luis Gil. 66% strike rate in that 14 strikeout start was the highest of the year for Luis Gil. It was against the White Sox. I really need to preface this. He felt so confident just throwing four seamers in the upper half of the zone, right? It was just so easy for him. So it wasn't necessarily 66% strikes with a changeup and slider, right? I think that Luis Gil, the more that he throws, the more that he gets comfortable and confident to just throw strikes. He's only had three games in nine starts above two earned runs. Actually, above one earned run, I should say. Six of them have been one earned run or fewer, which is just mind-boggling. 31% carry, 108 whip, and a 240 ERA is crazy good. It should... not last that 220 BABIP and whatnot, but as long as he throws strikes, his stuff is really good. And Luis Gil should stay in that rotation as long as he's pitching well. The cutter maybe is going to appear at some point. It's something that he's just like, all right, if I have nothing else, maybe I can have a cutter in here, but I wouldn't look into that now.
Yes. I would agree with you, except I wrote a whole article looking into it. Based on hypothetical, but I still, you can read that article on NBC Sports and see what maybe it would look like if he started throwing a cutter.
Oh man.
We'll start tier number six with number 44, Seth Lugo, number 45, Tanner Houck, number 46, Reynaldo Lopez, number 47, Michael King, number 48, Brian Bayo, number 49, Nestor Cortez, number 50, Joe Musgrove back off the IL, and number 51, Reese Olson. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
I've got a good name for this one. This is tier six. Pretty much the Hollies. I'm going to tell you after this break. So, Eric, when you're waiting for the train, right? This is important, okay? It's important to keep a pathway for people to go through and navigate, right? And honestly, when you're waiting for the train, you don't need to be right up at the line. If you want to know, cool, but we got the apps for that. We got things that say, hey, 1 minute away, 5 minutes away. You don't need to actually be peering down anymore. So those I respect that stay far away from the line, you know, do not go up against the rail and just stand back. And you can actually see when the train's running late, everybody finds a spot. There's always an open spot for you to stand against the back wall waiting for that train. Just let that happen. Let everybody out of the train and then you go on in.
Oh, you got to let everybody out.
No, you got to let everybody out.
I will sometimes extend the elbows out wide if I see you coming on the train when I'm getting off.
So oh wow, up. you would yeah, okay. Don't mess around with big boy Eric here.
I don't throw the elbows, but I might just keep them wide, and it's like, well, just let people get off the train first.
Yeah, well,
before
yeah.
Before you come on you the should. Train. I have to start this tier on a little bit of a downer, but I don't know if you saw the Reese Olsen injury tonight.
Oh, he got a comebacker, didn't he?
102 miles an hour directly off the hip.
Oh.
And could like barely walk off the mound.
Oh my gosh.
And this is a guy who had like the worst luck ever. I mean, who has like a 209 ERA without a win? Like this guy was pitching lights out, couldn't get any support. And now feels like it might be an IL stint. You know, which
as if Matt Manning needed more starts.
I know, I was going to say, I was so excited that Matt Manning got a chance. And then I was like, man, those starts were not that good. I was pretty upset about that.
They were pretty terrible.
But there's not a huge amount of movement here, except obviously in this tier, the biggest mover was Michael King, who's down 14 spots. Somehow, after just looking great against the Dodgers, he fell flat on his face. He feels incredibly hard to trust right now. I think that maybe we glossed over how hard it is to transition from the bullpen to the starting rotation when you've been in the bullpen pretty much your entire professional career. Like, I know he started off in the minors doing some starting, but like we were all just like, oh, he had, you know, those 8 great starts at the end of the year for the Yankees, so he can start. And maybe we're seeing some of that inconsistency rear its head. I just don't have another good explanation for how you totally dominate the Dodgers and then at home against the Rockies fall on your face.
Yeah. Some of these sweepers just got hit. And he left some of them over the plate and they got hit. And there were 5 of them in play. 4 of them went for hits, including a home run to Brendan Doyle. Here's the thing. I think that Michael King is really good. And I know this was not a good start. However, I don't think that he actually pitched nearly as badly as the 6 runs would tell you. He still had 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, and 5.1 innings. I'm sticking with Michael King here. It's one of those cases where I just think overall who he is and what he does is better than the sum of the results at the moment. And that could just be me being whatever and too blasé and all of that. But from what I've seen of Michael King, I just think, no, this is a guy who's much better than what we've seen overall. I mean, we have 6 earned runs, 6 earned runs, 4 earned runs, 4 earned runs, those kind of games. Yeah, it's also 3 of those, actually 4 of his starts were combining for 1 earned run, right?
Yeah.
You can say it's pure cherry bomb going back and forth.
Right. If you look at those starts you're talking about,
yeah,
like versus the Phillies in Colorado,
in Coors, right? Dodgers.
Versus the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Like, and then the first start of the year against the Dodgers was another. So you can explain those ones. The only one you can't really explain is this last one.
Yeah. And so it goes 46% left on base rate, near 500 BABIP, et cetera, et cetera. I still think he's great. So I understand people wanting to get rid of him and everything. I just feel, no, you're going to have King in your lineup and it's going to be better moving forward.
Yeah. Any more belief in the long-term consistency of Tanner Houck? I know that you've always been like, he'll be great against righties and he'll struggle against lefties. Sure. And that's totally a very common and very valid way to approach Houck, who does have a 194 ERA after tonight's seven shuttered innings against the Rays. And so
yeah, again, oh man, I haven't seen anything from today so far. And that's amazing.
He kind of keeps doing it. And it's like, I obviously he's not a 194 ERA arm. There's going to be some volatility, but I think maybe we're reaching a point where we can say like that inconsistency we thought would be there might not be there to the extent at least that we believed.
Yeah. Here's the thing. He hasn't allowed a single home run to a lefty yet. And the splitter has worked admirably. Last year, that was a very inconsistent pitch, 18% usage against lefties for just a 53% strike rate. This year, it's a 67% strike rate with 36% usage. Its ICR dropped from 50% to just 34% thus far. And that's pretty cool. I don't know how much I buy it. Meanwhile, the slider, which has a 49% ICR against lefties, just has a 167 batting average allowed to 42 BABIP against it. It does feel a little like it's gone his way a bit against lefties thus far. And the sinker, yeah, the sinker is a 42% ICR against lefties. Like, duh. It's 18% usage. He's mostly slider splitter, but I feel it's, I don't know. It's still a hurdle for him to overcome. And in the games that I've seen with Tanner Houck, it's a lot of, here's my splitter just in the zone, like do something with the splitter. Oh, sorry, with the slider, completely the slider. And then the splitter and sinker both just live arm side. And that's just how he does his stuff. It's just like, here's the slider all over the zone and not really like well spotted down here or there. It's just like, yeah, whatever, here you go. And then the sinker's like, no, I got to go right here. And the splitter's got to go arm side and down. It's worked, but it also, I think, caps his ceiling. I think it's really hard to become an ace with just a generalized slider like that.
Yes.
I
agree. I think you're seeing, I think maybe what I'm suggesting is more that you're seeing like there's no longer that volatility to the extent of like maybe he's not going to even stay in the rotation. Like,
oh, yeah.
Coming into the year, we're saying, I'm not sure if Houck is a starter. I'm not sure if he can last as a starter. And now I think the question is just like, it's not even, is he going to last as a starter? It's more just like, is this a guy you just keep on your roster all year? And maybe you're not starting him against like the best, guys like a team like the Orioles. You know what I mean?
But, right. The biggest fear I do have though, is he throws a sinker 54% of the time against righties. Understood. Mm-hmm. He does get a good O swing 31%. However, his ICR, the contact he allows on the sinker to righties, the best ones we see are like 31%, 35% because they jam him, right? But when you're throwing it 44% of the time and you're throwing a over 50% zone rate, like he has to throw strikes with these things in the zone, you're going to have a 50% ICR on it. And that's a little concerning. He hasn't had a single home run on the pitch yet, but guys are hitting this really hard. And that's going to catch up to him, I think, a little bit too. So there are signs of regression, I think, for Tanner Houck over time. I obviously have him as a holly saying like, yes, you hold on to this guy and you just roll with it. But the tier above is that tier of, no, you actually have ace potential. Like you have the ability, the path to be a top 20 and ace is going to ace kind of guy. While tier four is more of that, like, no, you're maybe not necessarily going to be absurdly good. But yeah, I believe this more long term, or it's just there's no way you're dropping this. Like Rangers Wars is in there. I'm like, okay, probably by like July, we're like, yeah, Rangers Wars, what is up with them? You know, fine. But everyone is so in on it. Maybe the changeup is really real. Fine. I'm obviously going to keep him up there. But like Jack Flaherty to me is more just overwhelming dominance, but also has a lower floor than most of the aces can ace tag, right? So I don't really believe he's going to get rid of that. So Tanner Houck is someone that, yeah, you're going to be holding on to. It's going to be great, but it's not the same ceiling. And I think he's squeezing the most out of what he has right now.
I would agree there. Tier 7 starts at number 52, Ryan Pepiot. Number 53, Christian Javier. Number 54, Christian Scott. Number 55, Hunter Green. Number 56, Blake Snell. Number 57, Christopher Sanchez. Number 58, Tanner Bibee. And number 59, Taj Bradley. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Ooh, okay, so now we're really getting into cherry bomb tier. Okay, there's a lot of risk reward with it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say pulling the emergency cord. And there are times for it, and it can be the right thing to do, and it's really tough to decide it. At the same time, there are times that people do the emergency cord, and you should not have done that.
Have you ever been on a train at the appropriate time where that was pulled?
I don't know, because it wasn't in my car.
Oh, in your car. Yes.
I have been told that it was.
Okay.
Maybe this should have been a lower tier, because most of the time that people pull the emergency cord, it's the wrong time to do it.
Yeah, they're being you know what. Yes. People are pulling the emergency cord on Christian Scott, though. I've seen a lot of people, based on just like roster rates, bailing, poor start against the Marlins. I personally, it wasn't a good start, but I am not letting it drastically change the way I view him, because I think there tends to be that volatility with rookie starting pitchers, especially mm-hmm. like he's not in the Skeens, Jared Jones tier where we were like, these are like top end starting pitchers. He was somebody that everybody was like, this guy's interesting. I think this guy can be good. He hasn't really emerged as a prospect. And then he started to at the beginning of this year. And so I think there's naturally going to be a little more volatility to what he brings to the table. And so I don't know how you respond to that, but like with those pitchers like that, I don't let one start make me go, oh, okay, well, that was the Marlins and he had a bad start and he's not good anymore.
Yeah. No, we know what Christian Scott is made of. I think what we saw in this one was just the four seamer was not spotted. I mean, the other one's like, oh, no, you can spot your four seamer. And I kind of just said, yeah, that's always what it's going to be. And this was less about like, oh, you didn't take advantage of the Marlins. I was like, oh, no, wait, hold on. You're doing a thing that you're not supposed to be doing. That is the fear for me, is that are you actually not that skilled at doing that? I think that he still is, though. And that's why he's, Christian Scott's around like Christian Javier, who just had an absurdly good start. And it's actually showcasing things that I've been wanting him to have forever. And Hunter Green is here, and who's throwing harder, and that's good again. And he just had 17 four-seamer whiffs against the Dodgers. Like, well, okay. So that's why Christian Scott is here. And despite his two first names, I still believe in him a bit. But it's just one of those things. Like, okay, show me that you can throw four-seamers upstairs, because you need to do that. It's just that pitch and sweepers. And when you lose one of those, then you don't have anything. You need both.
Yeah, I get that. And I fully support your movement of him. I was just, I'm talking more in generality about like feeling like people shouldn't give up, be so quick to give up, which I think do with some of these younger arms.
Again, it's always about, you're right, it's about what is their skill set and what do we expect of them. It's very easy for us to kind of group players together as the same mold. This guy, it was, oh man, I was just smoking mirrors or whatever. And anyone that's like that now is smoking mirrors. It's like, well, no, the cool part about baseball and one of my favorite things is that every pitcher is different. They have different ways to throw a ball into this box, And you can't massively just say, well, he's a prospect pitcher like this, so this other guy's a prospect pitcher like this always. I try to sometimes make things easier, but Christian Scott is very nuanced and it's a very specific skill. If he executes that skill, then he's cool.
Anybody else in this tier you feel like you want to address?
Let's see here. We got Ryan Pepiot. I debated where to put him. I initially thought I was going to put him at the end of tier 5. And I kind of realized, I've maybe been a little too aggressive with guys coming back from the IL. And I said in even last week's notes, like, hey, Ryan Pepiot will be at the end of tier 5. And here he's at the top of tier 7. You go, wait, what happened to tier 6? Well, just understanding how tiers works for me, guys, the groupings, it's so important that I keep them together. And tier 5 and tier 7 are more alike than tier 6 and tier 8. Different types of guys. Instead of just interweaving them like a double helix kind of, I don't work like that. I just say, this is that kind of group, this is that kind of group. So either they're going to be one or the other. And I decided to put him over there. If you want to put him in the inner tier five, down to 44, sure, instead of 52, by all means. But yeah, I mean, Ryan Pepiot, let's see what he's got. Hopefully he's back to where he was before.
I'm going to use that as a transition because tier number eight starts with number 60, John Means. Number 61, Jose Berrios. Number 62, Justin Verlander. Number 63, Jordan Hicks. Number 64, Chris Bassett. Number 65, Clark Schmidt. Number 66, Marcus Stroman. Number 67, Casey Mize. Number 68, Brady Singer. Number 69, Jose Soriano. Number 70, Jordan Montgomery. And number 71, Gavin Stone. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
I judge a lot of people on the train based on what they do with their bags. Okay. So it's really important when you have your bag. First of all, you don't put it on a seat. We all know that. That's pretty cool. But the one that people don't really understand enough is you have a backpack on and it's a little bit packed. You take that thing off. Okay. You take it off and you put it at your feet because that makes you wider. That makes you bigger. That gets in the way. Okay. Just take the thing off, put it by your feet. Big, big thing here. It's very boring, like everybody in this tier for the most part. Goes a long way.
Yeah, boring but useful. I'm looking at, you know, there's a lot of big drops in here from guys like Means or Verlander and Bassett. Are you really concerned about any of these guys? Or is it just, you know, they're safe arms who are maybe in a little bit of a downswing right now?
Yeah, with Bassett, I'm a little concerned. The secondaries aren't working as well. And
Finally? You're finally a little concerned?
Well, I mean, it's over time. It's always a process.
I know
you've always been like, I hate Bassett. It's like me and Kyle Hendricks. It's how Paul Spohr and I initially bonded in 2016. And it took us until 2021. It's like, see, we were right. You know?
that's where I'm at with Bassett right now.
Yeah. 3-4 years. It does feel a little bit like, okay, the sinker called strikes are still there, but the slider, the cutter, the curve, all the other friends are not really doing their part. And I don't think the Bass is just going to fall off a cliff or something like that at the moment. It's not going to be like a 4 or 5 ERA for the year. But considering the margin of benefit from Bassett, for like being like a 3-5 ERA guy to like a 3-9, that's actually a huge deal in your 12-teamers. And he's starting to look more like the latter, which means, do I really need to hold on to Bassett as much as I did before? That's kind of why that's there. With Verlander, he just doesn't get whiffs. He doesn't get a slider cooking like he used to. And his four-seamers, despite its massive vert, over 19 inches, terrible steep angle, terrible extension, doesn't have the same velocity as before. So it's easier to hit. And that's a little bit annoying. And Means, you were right. Maybe. I don't know. We were both off, I guess, Christian Scott versus Means. It means settling into being more of a Toby. With 7 innings shut out with 8 strikeouts, everything looked really nice. And then he's kind of settled off last two. And it's like, are you just kind of the same old Toby with a good win chance? Fine. So that's why I'm down on those guys. I mean, this whole tier is just like, ugh. Mize is throwing softer and stuff too. It's like, what are you doing? No, don't do that.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys that like Mize and Soriano and like Schmidt. But Schmidt is interesting. Jordan Hicks survived a little bit like last night or yesterday. The velo was down crazy, and then they announced
he was sick. He actually had an illness.
Yeah, right. And I was like, I was happy that came out. But yeah, I think Schmidt might be the guy I like the most in this tier. Weirdly,
I mean, we hope he had a start showcasing what he could be.
Yeah,
I did a whole video on it. Go check it out; it's really fun. We have a new editor. If you didn't notice, guys, we have Josh Sperry. He's editing our videos. It's fantastic. He's hilarious. Those YouTube breakdown videos are as polished as ever. So go check those out. It's a lot of fun.
I'm excited to check those out. I know you did one last week on somebody in this tier, number 72, Javier Assad. The video was on number 73, Alec Manoa. Number 74, John Gray. Number 75, Dean Kramer really let me down today. Number 76, Tyler Anderson. Number 77, Andrew Abbott. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
I'll tell you this one after this break. So, Eric, here's the thing. How do you feel about Showtime?
I'm not a huge fan.
I'm conflicted. Because you're learning a skill. These are not easy things to do.
Incredibly hard.
Trying to make money. Like, this is all right. You know, this isn't so bad. And also, I'm just trying to have my commute to my own thoughts and everything. I don't want unsolicited loud noises And, you know, there are times I've certainly seen where like people get very, you know.
Yeah. Or if you have to, move, because, you know, even if they say they're not going to kick you, you they just do. Need to move out of the middle of the car.
Yeah. So that's this. This is the Vargas rule, where it's like, it's only good until it's not. Mm-hmm. And Showtime can be like that. Okay. So all these guys here, Assad, Manoa, Greg, Kramer, Anderson, Abbott, they're all doing well at the moment. And I don't really believe that all of them are going to be still doing well by July 1st. But you have them on your team right now, so you're probably going to roll with it.
Sadly, Kramer had a poor start against the Cardinals tonight. I was hoping he would do a little well against a depleted offense. I heard an interesting comment. Jason Collette mentioned some data that he had taken on the flight of the ball and how the ball, whether the MLB changed the ball or not. It basically was just like the ball is traveling significantly less far in the air on average than it was last year.
Interesting.
And he actually specifically mentioned John Gray as somebody who that helps.
He's been texting me about John Gray.
Has he?
Yes.
And I thought that was interesting because we're starting to be almost 2 months into the year. We're starting to get a little bit of data, and this isn't saying like John Gray is going to be an ace, but it's saying, hey, maybe if this is a thing, maybe it does help raise John Gray's floor a little bit so that, you know, those, some of those blow up starts aren't as bad as they might have been otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, the four seamer isn't allowing as many home runs, right? John Gray is still like a really good slider guy without anything else to me. And I just don't think, look, he does this every year almost. It's like the nice little run that he has and then it goes away. It's been an absurd one after his first game. I think it was like 1.3 ERA in like 9 games, including one relief appearance of 1.2 innings of perfection with 4 Ks. But it's not going to last. It shouldn't last. But roll with it. What the heck? I mean, that's pretty much what this is. Like, sure, go ahead. Do your Tyler Anderson thing fast. You come into chat and you start trying to steamroll, saying like, why do you hate Tyler Anderson? I'm like, I don't. He just has a good changeup, and the cutter and four-seamer are bad, and he's throwing more cutters, and it's bad. And yeah, that's it.
If you had to, between these 5 guys who are in green in here, at least Manoa, Gray, Kramer, Anderson, Abbott, if you had to put your money on one of them having legs and lasting a little bit, who would you say?
The highest, right? That's my question. Because it's like, I looked back at 21 and 22 because I was just so curious. Like, all right, I have this extra data now, better data than I did back then. What assessment would I have made on Manoa in those years? And I would have said, bad four-seamer that he commands decently well, and a slider that's inconsistent, and a sinker that has one of the worst PLVs on its sinkers. And like, I would not have liked him in those 2 years. I could not figure it out.
Right.
Like, what really made it tick? And if I was embarrassed, really, because I was in on him in entering 2022 and in on him at guests in 2023, but then I pulled back a little bit by the end, but I was still like, no. I mean, everyone was in on Manoa in 2023, but still I was like, yeah, this should work, but I didn't understand it, right? And I saw both of the last 2 starts. The first one I did a video on, and I'm pretty much saying like he got away with a lot in that game. The second one, he actually earned more. Sinkers and four-seamers were better spotted inside. The slider was alive with the sound of music. It was nice. So that is the ticket for Alec Manoa. Mm-hmm. It's just, we've seen him over the past 2 years now just be like, nope, never mind. And I don't know. I can't really buy into it for the full year at this point. But yeah, you should be picking up Alec Manoa and just seeing what the heck is going on.
Wild that we're here, but we're here.
We're here.
We're also here with the guy who leads off tier number 10, who's somehow still pitching this year, even though I did not think it was to be the case. But it's number 78, Tristan McKenzie. Number 79, Robert Gasser. Number 80, Alec Marsh. Number 81, Logan Allen. Number 82, Brandon Fought. What's this tier called?
And why is it called that? The train tracks are not your garbage can, people.
No, they're not.
No. Stop putting things in the tracks. Okay? Delays the train. You get a little bit of a mini bomb. Like, this is a cherry bomb tier. Okay? So don't do it. Just don't do it.
Don't do it. Listen, when we first started recording this podcast together at the end of the summer last year, we joked that I kept wondering why you were so down on Alec Marsh. And that he had been changing his pitch mix last year to be a little bit more of like a sinker slider guy. The strikeouts are not there, but the ratios have been solid.
What do you mean the strikeouts
are not? Again, not suggesting there's anything more than what we're seeing, but has he emerged as a streaming option in good matchups?
Eric, what are you talking about? Last two games have been 7 strikeouts each.
I know, but yes, I'm trying to talk about
the strike rate of 22% and 16% the last two starts. He's four seamer. Is a 16% swing strike rate. It throws in nearly 40% of the time.
The global picture of the year is still a 20% strikeout rate hit pitcher.
But that was before the injury.
True.
And okay. He came back, and now he's at two starts like this. This is why it's a Vargas rule. You're like, look at the accent you brought out of me.
I do not want to be blamed for that.
Yeah, you are right now. That's what's coming. Okay, so look, this is the weird thing to me is that Alec Manarsh. I just combined
Alec Manarsh.
I just combined the two Alex. Oh my gosh. Alec Marsh, his four seamer shape, everything about it is not what you want, right? It's 15 inches of vert, which is bad. That's like dead zone. It's not a lot of drop. It's not a lot of right. It's bad. Horizontal break is a little bit of above average. It's bad. He has a one attack angle, which is just average. And it's an extension of 6.2, which is bad. And it's 94 miles per hour, which is average. And yet he has a 16% swing strike rate on this. And you're like, wait, how does he do that? He actually elevates it really effectively. He throws it 31% of the time in two strike counts. So, and Alec Marsh has an 89% percentile put away rate with that four seamer. So when he gets to two strike counts, he's actually really good at getting that whiff out of the zone. Two strike O swing is 86th percentile on his four seamer. So that's it. That's what I got for you. His slider is kind of meh. His curveball, when he throws it in the zone, has a low ICR. That's nice. The changeup is pretty meh. But if Alec Marsh is throwing those high four seamers and he does it strategically, there is opportunity. And he has the last two starts of 2 earned runs with 10.1 innings and 14 strikeouts. As I did really slow math. So there you go. I hope it works out for Alec Marsh, but how are you going to say he doesn't strike out? That's like the thing he's doing now.
Yes. Sorry. In the last two starts, that is the
well, there is also six, like three of his last four have come with at least 6 strikeouts, you could say.
Sure. And that 6 was against the Orioles prior to the injury. Yeah,
that's right. That was a weird one.
Yeah.
And what do you know? He had 7 out of 29 four-seamer whiffs on that one. And what do you have in the first 7K game? 10 out of 42 four-seamer whiffs. And what about the one against Seattle? 9 out of 39 four-seamer whiffs. It's all the four-seamer. I don't really think that's going to last because, of course, as I told you, it's not a very good one. It's very much about being precise with that pitch right at the top of the zone.
Right.
Probably not going to last.
Which is wild to me because when I wrote him up last year, it was that he added the sinker. I did give him a ticket. It was not for speed. He added the sinker at the end of August and he changed his slider into a sweeper. And it was like, oh, these are some interesting, you know, being like a sinker sweeper guy, taking some of the pressure off the four seam, which again was not a great pitch last year, but he was throwing it a lot more earlier on. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Now I wouldn't really call his slider a sweeper. And the sinker is, you know, his least used pitch and it isn't even giving up soft contact, right? The thought would be gives up soft contact with the sinker against righties, which allows the four seamer to play up because he can use the four seamer as more of a swing and miss pitch. So it's just funny that he's doing well, but the things that I identified that were interesting last year are not the things he's doing to do well. And so I'm conflicted in how I feel about it.
Yeah. You know, I actually would call his slider mediocre.
It's better than bad.
He sneezed. Eric sneezed. Otherwise, he would have laughed, guys. Okay?
Yes. That's the only reason I didn't laugh, people. It's the only reason. Let's get to this streaming tier.
Yeah.
This is the big tier at the end of all the streamers. It starts at number 83, Spencer Arrighetti. Number 84, Michael Wacha. Number 85, Jameson Taillon. Number 86, Griffin Canning. Number 87, Aaron Savali. Number 88, Andrew Heaney. Number 89, Reed Detmers. Number 90, Mitch Keller. Number 91, Mitchell Parker. Number 92, James Paxton. Number 93, Zach Littell. Number 94, Ben Blake Lively. Number 95, Sean Manaya. Number 96, Kyle Harrison. Number 97, Michael Lorenzen. Number 98, Simeon Woods-Richardson. Number 99, Tobias Myers. And number 100, the American Spork himself, Tyler McGill. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Congratulations, 11 for 11, Eric. Here we go.
We did it. We had one
golf
slip
clap
up
last for Eric for remembering to ask me what the tier is called for 11.
One straight. Slip up last week.
It was the first one.
It was the first one.
It was the first one.
Listen, all right. I was moving. I was in a
After
new environment.
After you even like bragged about it, then you just
I was in a
didn't.
New environment. I wasn't sure what was going on. I blacked out. I didn't know what was happening.
Unbelievable. You said there's a streaming one, which is right. So this is about on the stairs, and you know it's about two things. One, making sure that when you are leaving, you're letting someone catch the train. You're mm-hmm. getting out of their way. So that you could. But two, make sure that you follow the etiquette of like the fast lane and the slow lane. Okay? Right? Sure. Do not go the same pace as the person on your right as you go up. Don't blockade because there are people that got to go quick. And some people are just like, hey, I just want to go up the stairs. Right? So make sure you keep that flow, especially on the escalator. Oh my gosh, you better leave the left open. That's a left lane for walking. Right lane is just to hang out and let the thing guide you up. Okay.
Boom. Let's talk about two guys who I think some people might find surprising that they're in the streaming tier just because of name value. But Jameson Taillon and Aaron Savali have fallen down into the tier of streamers. Do you see a possibility where they can claw their way back up? Or is this just, is this just a moment where last few starts haven't been great and, you know, particular for Taillon? And so you don't have to hold them anymore.
Well, right. It's what value are you getting for holding on to these guys, right? And if someone doesn't have a good start where you want them this week, you constantly need to ask yourself, is this worth a streaming spot or not? And if not, you are in the streaming tier. It's just that simple. With this season, I think it's easier than ever to stream. You're seeing this in the streaming articles. I'm well over 50% once again. It's how it is, right? You should be able to finagle this. And that's, if you don't know, the streaming record is based on 20% or fewer in roster. And in most cases, that means that there are guys that are above 20% roster that are available, right? So if you see someone on your team that you feel isn't really worth to hold on for 10 days after the last start, you should be swapping them. And the fact that Jameson Taillon doesn't have only has one game over four strikeouts this year kind of sounds like, all right, this is not really the guy who's locked in at the moment. Do I think that he will be? Yes. I think over time that Jameson Taillon will get into the flow. He is not there. And Savali, you just can't start right now. I mean, you can't. Even like the teams he's faced in this horrible stretch. He's faced the White Sox twice. He's faced the Mets. He's faced the poor Jays offense. I mean, it's just not clicking with his curveball right now. He's not commanding well. And do I think that's going to be like that the entire year? No. But it's not worth it for you to hold on to it for that later. Just get value now. There's always going to be someone else. That's the cool thing about fantasy baseball is that there's always some new thing to get for just a month that is going to work out in your favor. Even like Martin Perez for the month of April was great, right? And then you moved on, you know? So it's don't really hold on to Aaron Savali too long and go get those streamers that you're used to.
Yeah, and you move on and you can move back. Like Ben Lively, who was gone and now is back on
now
here.
Now he's back, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Getting some good matchups.
Michael Wacha at 84.
Michael Wacha.
Here we go.
Had a good start today.
Here we go.
Anybody else on this tier, this giant tier that you feel like you'd like to share some words about?
I mean, Zach Littell, yeah, he's not that great. He had some good runs. He had a good K-minus walk rate before the Yankee game. And everyone's like, well, maybe you're going to return to that. And he's just, he throws sliders over the plate and hopes for the best. And the four-seamer doesn't give it shape. And it's not that cool. Andrew Heaney, Blake Snell blueprint was a little bit worse. It was the jaws of upstairs and downstairs kind of clamped into the middle. and it's not really that worthwhile to hold on to it. I do want to mention I did have Joe Ross in here, and then I was notified that he left his game with a back issue as I was putting out the final touches on the list. So I replaced him with Tobias Myers in hopes that he does get called up now and would take that spot. So I don't really say that Tobias Myers is that guy that you need to go for, but he is something one of intrigue that could be of value considering I do think innately what he brings to the table is kind of cool. It's four seamers that can be upstairs and do have elite shape. He has a trio of secondaries that he generally throws for strikes around the zone. So if he does get locked in with that, could be kind of cool for Tobias Myers.
Yeah. Agree. A lot of names on here I think are really interesting in isolated starts. Mm. Some guys in deeper formats like a Sean Manaea that I would hold on my roster and Giants. Maybe not play all the time.
Yeah. But I mean, in 12 teamers, it's like what Sean Manaea does is just like five right. innings of 200 runs. It's like, okay, that's a good game.
You can get that.
Right. Tyler McGill is at 100. I'm curious to see what he did tonight. The American Sport buddy. Don't really know what we're going to get. He's number 100 because it's interesting. But really, I think Tyler McGill is not going to be anyone I'm interested in until he's actually locating four seamers upstairs consistently and then pairing it with something else below. Like he can do the Bailey Ober because he does have that elite extension. But he just needs to actually execute that. If he's throwing low four seamers or just not really going to top third, then that just doesn't work.
Or until he moves to the bullpen where he might be very good.
Oh my. Yeah, probably. Oh my gosh.
I think that's it for us. Yeah.
We learned so much about Subways today, guys.
We did. It's important that people understand the etiquette, especially when they're, you know, they might not be from.
You can always ask. Like, if you need help to get to a station, everyone will help you. Just be kind about it.
Yeah. Well, the people will let you know what if you're on the right train or not, where you go, where you're going to get off.
I'm going to be your best friend.
Yeah. That'll be the end of the conference. When we're done, we're done.
That's it.
We'll tell you.
We're not continuing on.
No, but we'll give you the information.
We got you.
Yeah. I got my column coming out on Wednesdays, mixing it up over at NBC Sports. I do not yet know the pitchers that I'm going to talk about this week, but I will look at some pitch mix changes. Been having some really good conversations with Alex Chamberlain, who I know we both are fans of, in terms of, you know, curating some kind of like pitch mix change leaderboard on his pitch leaderboard. So it's easy to see like month over month who's changing what they're doing. And that could help everybody, but also me with my articles. He does have a new pitch tracker on there, so that's just cool. If you like Alex, support the work that he does. He has a new pitch tracker on his pitch leaderboard, so that'll be coming out, and I'll be watching. I'm excited to watch some of these YouTube videos that you guys are putting out. I'm gonna try to check some of those out tomorrow.
That's awesome. Yeah, you should do that. I'm doing about 4 a week. I'll have a new one up tomorrow. You guys actually can request who you want to see, especially if you're there in live stream in the morning. So let me know who you want to watch and we'll do it together.
Oh yeah. I'm going to have to look at the schedule ahead and see who I want to see. But that's going to do it for us today on this episode of On the Corner. I'm Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And yeah, that's it for tonight. I got nothing fun today, guys. I'm going to go call it a night and try to be better next time.